just when we thought everything was normal and just going in the right direction for the Commanders, God, we got that push notification, that alert, the news, however you want to describe it, with Laremy Tunsil, and it's now just moving forward without him for 4 to 6 months. This is training camp, and this is what happens. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials. We'll talk to David Harrison in about 30 minutes or so. A little more about really the plan for the Commanders and how they're going to approach this for the next 4 to 6 months, maybe the entire season. Now, my hope here, though, is that for Laremy Tunsil, he goes overseas, does some of that blood spinning that Kobe Bryant did and a lot of other athletes have done, hyperbaric chambers, red light therapy maybe, some cold plunging. The cold plunging probably won't help with that, but just anything. Look, we've watched athletes recover from injuries faster and faster because of sports science today. So the optimistic version of me says, all right, he'll be back soon. He's going to heal. He's going to do all the things he needs to do. I mean, look at Jason Tatum. Came back for the Celtics this year from a torn Achilles faster than most people expected. Lots of guys are coming back from other injuries faster. That's the hope. The reality is for the near future and medium-term future, the Commanders got to figure out what they're going to do at left tackle. And look, I get it, right? This is a blow. It just hits you right in the gut because this is somebody that just signed an extension, was worth all the draft picks they traded for. And that was a big part of the conversation about not having a second-round pick in this draft, right? It's like, well, you got Laremy Tunsil. You protected your quarterback's blind side. You did all the right things. Sometimes this is just how football goes, right? This is how any sport goes. There's always injuries in camp. And that's why depth is so important. That's why going out and building up this roster and not getting caught the way that they did last year, lacking all that depth and being exposed. This team spent a lot of money, and they've already had a decent amount of guys on this offensive line they've been working through and working around. And look, I don't know if it's going to be Brandon Coleman or not, or Andrew Wiley. I mean, it was supposed to be Wiley. Now it might be Coleman. Again, we'll ask David Harrison in about 25 minutes or so, see what he's got to say about that too. But this is... this is the reality for the Commanders now, is that you're the second most position in the most important position in football is now lacking, right? Quarterback's number one, left tackle's number two. Because if you're not protecting the blind side of your quarterback, then you end up having an Andrew Luck situation where they retire at 29. And that's, listen, credit the organization, credit Adam Peters. They went out after the first year and they said, we've got to get somebody that's going to protect our quarterback. And that's what you have to do, because it's not just about going out and adding a bunch of receivers because your quarterback's on a rookie deal. It's more than that. And that's really what this team was able to do, is starting to really think over the last... I mean, it started with that. Now you've seen this offseason a little bit more about the trenches, right, on the defensive line. They really needed to fix that. Building a team from the inside out matters, but it's not just the starters. It's the depth. And that's now what's going to be tested, at least to a point. And look, who knows? They may go out and make some moves. They may go and try to... there's still things that they can potentially do to fix this. Who knows if somebody gets, you know, if somebody gets released at some point. I mean, we're still early in training camp. It's August 10th. So there's opportunities for them to do this. But I will say this. There is going to be proof as to whether or not this team is good or not right away. And there is going to be proof right away whether David Blough is going to be a great offensive coordinator or not. Now, I'm not saying they start off 1-2 in this grind of a stretch that they have to start the season. That's it. Oh, wrap it up. Like, there's nothing there. But if David Blough and this offense can succeed without Laremy Tunsil to start the season, with a gauntlet of a stretch to start the season in terms of opponents in the first two games, division games on the road, all of those things, if they can do that with a rookie offensive coordinator, it's a bright future. And that's really the whole goal, right? The whole goal was to build a team that's going to be sustainable, to build a team that's going to have some longevity. Look, you're going to have turnover. You're going to have guys not get re-signed or decide they want to sign somewhere else, or, you know, coordinators getting promotions. Offensive coordinators leave for head coaching jobs. Defensive coordinators sometimes do too, but, hey, look, we know it's the offensive guys first that get those jobs. But, you know, if you are the Commanders right now and you come out of camp and this is your only major injury, that's a blessing. Like, it is. It's a big injury. But if you're able to improvise with what's happened, because this is early in camp, remember that. Like, at least this is early in camp. You can work through who's going to be at left tackle. Maybe there's some level of a rotation that's there. You at least have an opportunity. This isn't week three or week four of the season where then you're going out the next week. Like, imagine if this happened right before week three against Seattle and that defense. I know it's not the same defense, but that's who the Commanders open the regular season with at home, right? You're at Philadelphia, you're at Dallas, and you're home against Seattle. I mean, and don't forget, you got the Giants week five who have a really good pass rush. They got a lot of young guys that can get after the quarterback. So, look, they're going to be tested. And that's this is a proof of what David Blough can do as a coordinator. And look, in the end, we all know what this comes down to, too, right? This comes down to Jaden Daniels carrying this team. Like, this is why quarterbacks get the big bucks, right? This is why they get paid. This is why teams have to decide whether they're going to sign them to these big deals or not. Some teams, it's more difficult than others because you got to make a decision like if you're the Panthers or if you're the Texans with your quarterbacks. Some, it's easy. We all knew that Patrick Mahomes was going to get a big deal, and he keeps getting big deals, and that's how it works. But if Jaden Daniels can show this year as well, one, stay healthy. Some of that's in his control. Some of it's not. But on top of that, if Jaden Daniels can show that he can, you know, navigate this offense with a lot of new faces, really everybody's new in this offense, even though David Blough's got elements that are going to work from the last one. Like, you got Jaden Daniels under center more. You've got some new wide receivers out there. You got Chigakonkwo was going to be essentially a de facto wide receiver at times for you. You got a backfield that's got different guys that can catch the ball out of the backfield. You got an offensive line that's going to be shuffled around. Oh, and by the way, an offensive line we still haven't figured out center yet. Like, yeah, we think it's Nick Allegretti, but Nick Allegretti's been hurt the whole time. And he hasn't played center that much for this team. And I don't care. Like, the whole, oh, guys cross-train and they work at different positions on the offensive line. Yeah, they do. But he hasn't done this full-time. So this is a thing. Like, there's no question this is a thing for this team. Because now we're talking center, we're talking left tackle, you're everything, there is a trickle-down effect, right? We talked about last week, right? The trickle-down effect of what Stephon Diggs meant to this offense, where the perception was, and I get it, it's perception, so you're like, well, Nick, it's social media. There's plenty of good out there, too, on it. But the perception went from the Commanders need help at wide receiver, who's it going to be, to look at what Stephon Diggs now adds look to all of these weapons that they've got. Like, really, the perception changed just signing Stephon Diggs. You got Diggs and Antonio Williams, and you've got Terry McLaurin and Chigakonkwo and Rashad White out of the backfield, and, oh, you've got all these weapons for Jaden Daniels, and that's just from one guy getting signed. And that shifted everybody down a notch to where you have Antonio Williams in a spot where he is more of the slot guy. He is going to get the third most targets, let's say. Maybe in the fourth, if Chigakonkwo is out there getting significant targets too. Like, all of those things, it was a positive trickle-down effect. It was a good thing. Stephon Diggs put everybody in a position one notch down in terms of targets, responsibilities, all of those things. But now you've got this trickle-down effect in the other way, where you've got guys moving around to different positions on the offensive line that you didn't want before, when you already had a question about what center was going to look like. And that's really, like, you are now going to be playing at a disadvantage the entire season until at least Laremy Tunsil comes back. So now it's really going into the mind of David Blough and how he works on this and how he improvises where he needs to and also figures out who's going to be there on a regular basis, because you can't be rotating left tackles. Like, if Brandon Coleman's the guy, fine. If Andrew Wiley's the guy, fine. But they got to figure out who it is, and they got to be out there consistently, because that's a major problem for this team to not have really a position that this organization's handled well over the years, if you think about it, right? I mean, Trent Williams and Chris Samuels, like, you've had two guys there that have been in left tackle for a long time. This organization's done a lot of things wrong, but they've gotten left tackle right. Now, did they ruin the Trent Williams situation at the end? Yeah, but that was the dopes that were in charge before. So, like, what'd you expect? They ruined everything. They're like Medusa. They stare at things and it just turned to stone. So they ruined every relationship, and here we are. So, you know, this is now the real test. This is going to be the test for the offense. This is going to be a test for the front office in case they need to maybe address this in free agency or a trade in some way. But It's not a great position to be in. Nobody wants to lose a left tackle, but I also don't think that it's the end of the world because it's so early in camp. And then, yeah, the hope is that Laremy Tunsil gets back healthy in 4 months, maybe 3.5. Right? Let's just think 3.5 months, a little bit sooner. Plus, it's the end of the season too, where you look at that stretch: Tennessee, Arizona, you know, a couple of bad teams in there. God, their schedules. Every time I look at the Commander's schedule, I just go, my God. I hate playing the win-loss game, but it's even on the back half, like at Minnesota. What is Minnesota going to look like in that defense? If you still don't have Laremy Tunsil, you think Brian Flores isn't going to be going after the left side of the offensive line? You know he is. Jacksonville's better. Ugh, God. We'll talk to David Harrison in about 15 minutes. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Well, the offensive line is a problem, isn't it? feel like we've said that for years, though, about this team. Nick Ashew on the Fan. David Harrison in about 10 minutes. Its center was already a question, and now it's left tackle. You know, it's funny. After Stephon Diggs signed, we talked about that last week, right? It was like, okay, so what's the new thing that we're worried about that the spotlight's on for this offense? And it's an easy answer, right? It was center at the time. Nick Allegretti's barely out there. He's been hurt and still trying to, listen, I'm going to say learn the position. I don't care if people say, guys, cross-train and play different. No, there's still a chemistry that needs to be built with center and quarterback. Well, now we add left tackle to the mix. And listen, who knows? You got some veterans that are going to get slotted into that spot, either Brandon Coleman or Andrew Wiley. It was supposed to be Andrew Wiley. Now we're hearing Brandon Coleman potentially there. But here's what it's really going to be. A learning curve throughout the entire training camp and preseason. Period. Like, that's what we're looking at here. Again, the one positive, I guess, silver lining out of this whole Laremy Tunsil injury is that it happened at the beginning of August. It'd be a lot worse if it happened in the middle of the regular season. So they have a chance to find different ways, and maybe it's in-house, and maybe it's from outside, free agency, trade, whatever it is. But you know, this offensive line is going to be a problem. The good thing is you have a mobile quarterback. Now, look, we don't want Jaden Daniels running unnecessarily, right? Here's the thing. You're not going to take that away from him. And he's going to be playing under center more. The offense is going to look a little bit different. They're going to try to run the ball more. But, you know, you need an offensive line that can also run block. So that's, yeah, when you just start going down the depth chart and thinning out the way the offensive line looks, again, there's a trickle-down effect everywhere that you go. But, you know, this is, in the end, it all still falls mostly on Jaden Daniels' shoulder. That's where the weight lies. And that's a responsibility that, you know, any quarterback in the NFL or at any level has, right? There's a responsibility to basically carry your team, carry your offense. That's just how the game works. That's why quarterbacks are so valuable. That's why they get paid so much. And that's why teams automatically have lower ceilings when you don't have a quarterback. I mean, how many times have we gone into a Commanders football team Redskins season and gone, well, if only we had a quarterback, right? We know at least what Jaden Daniels' floor is when he's healthy, and that's his rookie season. It's just a matter of whether or not he can stay on the field, stay healthy, and be able to be put in a position to really succeed in this offense. And that, again, I understand that there are other bodies and people and names that are all involved with this, but it still starts with your quarterback. And this may be, and call me crazy for a second here, and that's fine. But with all of the additions that this team made defensively this offseason, what if, I'm going to say something crazy, get ready, what if the defense carries them at the beginning of the season? I know.
Insane.
I know, Metal Chris, it's crazy. It's a crazy idea, but hear me out on this. And I know whenever somebody says, hear me out, we know that we got a problem. But I'll be the one that's willing to say it. They went out and addressed a ton of needs defensively. You've added more of a pass rush. You've added somebody like Sonny Styles in the draft that can just do everything for you, hope at some point. You can maybe in theory, get more out of Frankie Louvu, who's now getting more and more opportunity, it's looking like, so far in camp. You add a Nick Cross at safety. Even just from a little bit more of a depth perspective, somebody like a Tim Settle, like Charles Omenihu, like these are names that maybe are a little bit farther down the depth chart, but they're going to be rotating guys a lot defensively, keeping the bodies fresh, keeping them aggressive. If the first couple weeks of the season and beyond, which it can be a little bit of a struggle for teams, especially offensively, if you look over the last even just couple of seasons in the NFL, even just one of the big conversations was running back numbers were up. Teams were running the ball more. Touchdowns for running backs were up. Passing yards per game were down through the first month of the season. You were seeing a trend where teams' offenses were taking a little bit more time to ramp up, and this is what happens when you don't do much in the preseason. You can have joint practices and scrimmages and all kinds of stuff. And I understand why teams don't like playing starters much in the preseason. I get it, right? Some do, some don't, but we've seen less in terms of actual starters getting significant snaps in the preseason. And last year, what did we get? We got one drive against the Bengals with the starters. One. And it looked awesome, right? Remember that? They were running the ball. We're like, oh my God, they're going to run the ball like crazy. Oh, Chris Rodriguez, he'll get carries this year. Oh, wait. Oh, they definitely won't abandon the run in the middle of a game. Oh, Cliff Kingsbury did it. Like, that's what it turned out to be. So, hopefully, when you have two new coordinators on both sides of the football, they can look at what was done last season and say, let's do things a little bit differently here. So this may end up being a situation where they do have to lean on the defense. And because that's also a new system with new pieces on that roster, there isn't a lot of film on them. And there's opportunities to sneak in some certain wrinkles that are going to confuse offenses. And it makes up for what could be maybe a slow start to the Commanders' offense. Like, there is a possibility. They also could put up 40 against the Eagles. I know it's a really good defense. But, like, again, that's not out of the realm of possibility either. They have got some of those weapons there. But I think it's just what we see the first month of the season isn't necessarily going to be the entire year. But if they can show that they are a successful team on both sides of the football and maybe defense looks more improved than offense at the beginning, we could feel a little bit better, even if it's, you know, they're 500 through the first four games of the season, right? Like, you don't want to lean too much into looking at the first month and saying that's everything. But if so, look at it like this, okay? So when we talk about summer league with the NBA, and AJ DeBonta looks great in summer league, right? He looked great. Things he could work on, we know, but like, he's a rookie, so it's fine. AJ DeBonta looked really good in summer league. You would expect that. But if he looked terrible in the preseason, that's when you'd get a little bit worried, right? You're like, or in summer league, you get a little worried. You're like, oh man, all right. So is he going to struggle shooting the ball in the NBA? Is that going to be a thing? Like, you expect to see that level of success, but you're also not going to panic and think that it's the end of the world. There's plenty of basketball ahead of him, and you know that there's going to be a learning curve there. It's the same thing with the first, you know, few weeks of the regular season with the offense. It may not click completely, but you don't necessarily panic if it looks really bad. But if it looks good, like if you see right off the bat, Jaden Daniels just looks better in this David Blau offense, and they're utilizing the run more, and they're getting guys involved out of the backfield, and you know, all these things, then the question becomes, okay, what's next? What's the next layer? Because you've seen, right, you've seen that there is at least a high floor, right? Jaden Daniels, rookie year. We at least know what the floor is. The floor, when he's healthy, is his rookie year. You expect him to get better. You expect him to improve. You expect all that. When you start to see that good can exist, right, it makes you feel a little bit better. So if we get a strong start to the defense at the beginning of the season, but the offense is struggling a little bit, can at least say, hey, the defense is better. We've got proof that they've shown us what their floor could be, right? They can at least, okay, we know we can count on this defense, and we couldn't do that in the past. But it isn't going to be great not having your starting left tackle there. Really, I mean, I guess we could argue the best player on the Commanders, right, because you know, he's the only top 10 guy they had. I know they're polls. I know. But still, like, there's, you know, still something to be said for that. All right, we'll talk to David Harrison, WSA 9 and Locked On Commanders next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Well, we went from one major question on the offensive line to now two, bare minimum. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Laremy Tunsil, torn triceps, going to miss 4 to 6 months. Nick Allegretti, been battling a calf injury. Still trying to work him into the actually playing the center position a little bit more. And here we are. It's just, this is how training camp goes. There's always something. But at least we're not talking about Terry McLaurin's contract or Brandon Ayuk. So those are positives right there. David Harrison jumps on with me. Locked On Commanders. Commanders squad. WSA 9. And listen, David, I want to find the positive in this. I want to hope that Brandon Coleman or Andrew Wiley, even though we're kind of hearing both names, could fill in at left tackle. I want to know that they're going to be able to protect our quarterback. That's all I care about, damn it. So I'm going into this with a positive vibe that it's going to work out and they're going to be able to fix this thing. Where are you right now? Yeah. And do you have any insight as to who's actually going to be that left tackle for them?
I mean, I think the plan pretty firmly moving forward is Brandon Coleman. You know what I mean? And the spirit of competition, of course, always exists and all that kind of stuff. But I think Brandon is probably going to come out of this thing okay. And you know, I don't know. He's not Laremy Tunsil, and nobody should expect him to be Laremy Tunsil for sure. You know, so like top five left tackle production or performance probably isn't, you know, necessarily a realistic expectation at this stage. But, you know, I think he can be a really solid left tackle. I think he did pretty well his rookie year, you know, playing that position. Obviously, he got some help and some chip blocks and things like that. He'll probably still need that, or they'll at least give it to him anyway. You know, at least to start the season before he proves if he can advance to the point where he doesn't need him. And I think that's just more so something on, you know, offensive coordinator David Blau. And this is where you find out the coaches who say, you know, my job is to scheme to the strength of my roster and my team, you know, versus trying to force my team to just execute my scheme no matter what. And he even said as much today, you know, he's just got to figure out how this thing is going to change to accentuate what Brandon does well. And you know, the part that is not muttered as much publicly is cover up the things he doesn't do well. But that's obviously a part of it. And that's, this is where, you know, this is why you get to pay the big bucks is to figure this out.
You know, the one, I mean, I'm calling it a silver lining, but let's be honest, this sucks no matter what. But, you know, the one silver lining, I guess, David, is that, like, at least it happened at the beginning of August. You know, it gives him more of an opportunity to really work through some things. How much do you think, if at all, and maybe you've heard some things, and I know it's really early, so there's maybe not that much meat on this bone, but, I mean, like, how much does this alter their approach at all? Because that is, look, that's your quarterback's blind side. That's second most important position, basically, after the quarterback at left tackle.
Yeah, I think the good news is, you know, a lot of tight end sets, you know, a lot of multiple tight end sets and things like that, things that we already knew they were going to be doing offensively, quick game, leaning on the run, you know, running backs as outlet receivers, things like that, all kind of go hand in hand with losing your best pass protector. You know, whenever a team loses their best pass blocker, they got to get a faster game, they got to get a shorter game, and they got to get kind of a bigger game from a formational standpoint as far as how many guys are in line, things like that. So they've already been kind of doing some of those things that kind of help facilitate this. The other good news, it's already been in preparation. Brandon Coleman worked out with Laremy Tunsil this offseason, went out there and spent about a month with them, trained with them, learned how he prepares, how he takes care of himself, and how, you know, how he approaches being a pro. So Brandon, you know, was kind of taught by the perfect person to, you know, if you're going to replace Laremy Tunsil, Laremy Tunsil is the best guy to teach you how to replace him. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, got a little bit of an education there. And to your point, you know, if you're looking for silver lining, it kind of settles another job. You know, left guard job to Chris Paul seems pretty firm now. You know, not, again, not official, but I think we're all pretty confident that's going to be the outcome there. And so, just like you said, it's early August, and those two guys are going to get a lot of reps working side by side. They've had some reps from last year working side by side. And as soon as you get Nick in there, you're going to get your starting five kind of on the ground and give them the opportunity to try to solidify themselves as much as possible.
How close is Allegretti to returning?
I think, you know, I'm hopeful that he can come back before, you know, Detroit, before they head to Detroit for that week 2 preseason game. I don't, you know, I think we'll hopefully find out something more, you know, in the next couple of days from DQ as much as he wants to and can tell us. But the good news is we've seen Nick out there, you know, watching practice, being with his teammates, and, you know, it's never a firm timeline, but we talked about with like guys like Trey Amos and others, like when they're out there doing that, that's kind of a good sign that they're close to coming back. So I think Nick is close, but at the same time, there's the whole, you know, factor of this staff potentially being a little bit more conservative, especially during the time of year that it is. Nick's IQ is not sprained or, you know, strained or anything like that. And so the biggest power that he has, the biggest weapon he has, is his IQ, his leadership, and his ability to communicate. None of that's going away. You still want the reps, of course. But, you know, the good news is what Nick does best is fully healthy and ready to go.
Talking to David Harrison here on The Fan, I've seen at least a little bit, and I know it's small and we haven't had pads, but Stephon Diggs, we're getting some flashes, man. We're seeing some highlights here. What's he looked like out there for you?
Yeah, I mean, had some pads on today, you know, no full contact, you know, nobody's trying to take off each other's head, same team and all that kind of stuff, but man, he looks good. He definitely doesn't look like the oldest receiver on the field, I'll tell you that much. And, you know, the theme all offseason has been getting younger, getting faster, getting more athletic. And I know there were some people, at least I think a minority of people, but, you know, a loud minority of people who were kind of like, oh, great, now, you know, the team's just getting older again. And you know, like I said, he doesn't look like he's the oldest cat on the field. Looked really good today. Got a few more reps, I think. You know, I don't count rep for rep, but it felt like he got a few more reps today and maybe he hasn't, you know, in the past couple days. Had a really nice play connection with Jaden Daniels, you know, come in intermediate route towards the right sideline, and Jaden just kind of feathered the ball right over Leo Chenal's outstretched hand and right to Stephon Diggs in front of the safety, just the perfect place for the ball. So Jaden, you know, doing his thing there, Stephon getting open for his quarterback, connecting for a big play. And, you know, I think it was a 2-minute scenario, put him in scoring range. Ultimately, they had to kick the field goal, but you like to see that connection just 3 days in. And it just kind of makes you wonder how good this duo can be. And then the trio with Terry McLaurin on top of it.
Yeah, and I mean, you start talking about Antonio Williams in that mix with Diggs and Terry McLaurin at the top there, too. What do you think, and again, you see some, you don't see a lot, since I feel like I need to preface everything with like, yeah, we got a lot more to still see, but, you know, Antonio Williams and Stephon Diggs, and you and I have talked about this before where, you know, there was a little bit of a worry they might be similar in some ways. How can you see them coexisting in this offense?
Well, I think I go back to, you know, a lot of us had conversations about Antonio coming out of college. Like, is he slot only? You know, is the theory that he was limited to the slot at Clemson because of the quarterback play? And is it one of those things where just because he wasn't asked to do it in college doesn't mean he can't do it in the NFL? We've seen plenty of examples. I mean, Terry McLaurin is an example of that, right? So I think the great thing about this scheme with David Blau is the things that we know Antonio does well, he's going to be able to do in this scheme. And then some of the things that maybe are a little bit just, you know, unproven, untested per se, he's going to have the opportunity to do them in this scheme. And the great thing is both of those guys are going to be able to do the same amount of stuff. Like there's not going to be a huge, you know, I would say drop off, because I mean, Steph and his experience obviously is incredibly valuable, but I think from just an athletic performance ability standpoint, Antonio is going to be able to do a lot of things on the field while Steph is on the field. They'll be able to rotate in and out. You know, Stephon Diggs is still the oldest wide receiver in the room, so keeping him fresh is certainly a good idea. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to give him a breather on the sideline while Antonio goes and gets some burn, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea either. But, yeah, there's certainly ways for them to coexist on the field at the same time, whether it's a rotational route. But, you know, I think the great thing is you don't want to put a ton of pressure on a third-round rookie. Everybody loves the excitement. Everybody loves the anticipation. But, man, this team, like from the internal team, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and David Blau went into this thing in September and said, yeah, Antonio's going to be, you know, like an 85-90, you know, target guy. That I think that would be a very bold, but, you know, kind of a reckless goal in mind. So I don't think they're going to go that route. But Antonio's going to have his opportunities for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a lot of excitement about what he can bring. And now it feels like he's, you know, in a lot of ways, too, kind of put in a better position, too, David, because, like, it's not now with the attention so much on Terry and Stephon Diggs, I feel like there, at least in theory, can be more opportunities for him, simply the fact that, like, defenses are going to be paying attention to other receivers and maybe Chigakonkwo before him.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it really does become, you know, kind of a figure of poison. Like, we've seen, you know, these clips, and everybody's talked about Antonio and his separation ability from, you know, the day he was drafted and then all the way through every day at camp. It seems like there's a new, you know, video out there of him just kind of making someone look like they had a bad day of practice, you know. But that's what the really good receivers and really good route runners are able to do. So if he can do some of those things, and if he can get those one-on-one matchups because, you know, teams are rolling over to Terry or double teaming, you know, trying to double team Chig. Maybe they don't have a coverage linebacker that they can trust. They got to double him and give him bracket coverage and just, you know, these other things. And it's kind of like the opposite, you know, the equal but opposite side of the pass rush, where Durante Jones tries to do everything he can to get his guys one-on-one matchups with blockers by simulating pressure or bringing pressure and forcing the blocking team to kind of spread out a little bit. The offense is essentially looking to do the same thing, where there's so many ways they can attack you. And oh, by the way, you've also got number five back there. So if you leave him unaccounted for, you're basically toast. That you're going to get your playmakers in really advantageous situations. And Jaden just has to basically find the right guy.
All right. Durante Jones' defense, early impressions of it for you?
Fun. A lot of fun. You know, I mean, there's guys flying around, guys coming from all different directions. You know, I've seen corners blitz, linebackers blitz, I've seen linemen, you know, drop out into coverage. I mean, it really is just one of those things where I think the greatest part of it is, you know, everybody staying healthy is obviously a big key to it, of course. But I think this will be a season where a lot of times, you know, you see a play happen and you go to social media, or maybe it's in the press box, or something, a fan or a media member is like, yeah, I saw that coming from a mile away. I knew exactly what they were doing as soon as they stepped on the field, and unfortunately, you were correct. And I think this time it's going to be a little bit harder to do some of those things. You know, it's a lot of fun. I had a conversation with another member of the media today. Actually, we're watching the defense pretty intently, and you know, I'm not a quarterback by any means, but just trying to kind of like identify some like the triangles and stuff on the field that quarterbacks try to look for, depending on how they're taught to do all this kind of stuff. And man, if we weren't wrong, pretty much every single time. There was one rep where it was kind of easy, but, you know, that's definitely a one-off. But, you know, it's a lot of fun to know what you're talking about, but it's also a lot of fun to not know, because that's really when you challenge your knowledge base and your ability to expand and learn. And so I'm having a lot of fun watching this defense.
You know, it looks like, too, Frankie Louvu is getting a lot of opportunity here. He's somebody, David, I got a lot of high hopes for, just because we saw what he can be 2 years ago. And we talk about all these additions they've made to this defense, but there's also at least the hope that you get more out of Frankie Louvu, or, you know, a Johnny Newton, or obviously Dorrance Armstrong being healthy adds to that, too. But it feels like there's been a lot of Frankie Louvu so far.
Yeah, Frankie's been, it looks like they're gonna be able to get Frankie freed up again. You know, it's always a little tentative. Like, you're hopeful that you're gonna get to see that 2024, you know, second team all pro caliber Frankie Louvu again. But you know, wanna see it against another team. Like, let's see, you know, what happens when the Dolphins come to town, and does it look the same, and does it look effective? But man, this pass rush, whether it's been Frankie or if it's been, you know, Sonny or Adafe or any of them, I mean, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, you know, has been making plays, getting in the backfield on a regular basis as well. Like, just this defense is definitely designed to go. So, you know, it's just going to be indicative of can Durante Jones stay ahead of the opposing offensive coordinator that week? And if he can, there's going to be a lot of it'll be interesting to see how creative these defenders get with their sack celebrations.
You're making me feel like this defense might be capable this year. I'm getting a little excited, I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, we talked about it, you know, we talked about it before. I can't remember the year and team, but I think it was Flores taking over the Vikings defense, whatever year that was, like 2022, something like that. They inherited a near bottom of the team defense, and in that 1 year turned it into a top 10 defense. And I'm not saying that's what everybody should expect, but, you know, it's a possibility. It's a thing that's happened before. Durante comes from that tree. He comes from a lot of defensive coordinators, you know, Vance Joseph, Lou Anarumo, Zimmer, Flores. Like, he comes from a lot of guys who have been very successful in the National Football League. And if you give him the horses to be able to put the thing together, you know, he's definitely got the pedigree to be able to get it done.
How much concern is there around Trey Amos and, you know, dealing with more injuries again already?
Yeah, it's not advantageous. It's certainly, you know, it's certainly not, you know, what you want to hear or see happen, or see him leave the field, you know, in his second day back from a broken leg. I didn't see the play happen, like where he got injured. I didn't see it. I actually don't know any reporters that did see it, so I don't know if anybody got their eyes on it. So it's kind of hard, you know, if you knew it's like kind of a fluky thing, then you're like, okay, like, you know, it happens, and, you know, try not to connect it too deeply. But if it's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, he just kind of came down and for whatever reason just didn't give him the support it needed to, then, you know, I'm not a doctor by any means, so I don't know how much that's connected to, like, previous injuries, things like that. You know, we know that, you know, DQ shared that he had the soft tissue kind of soreness going on from the rehab. So you just kind of wonder, like, how compromised is his lower body, and is it going to be a nagging issue? But we also know, too, you know, through reputation and all that stuff, like, this is a staff that's very conservative when it comes to returning guys to practice. Mm-hmm. So we have a head coach that you're covering here who obviously has demonstrated time and time again that he's going to put the wellness of the guy before he puts the wellness of, or the playability of the player first. So that being said, whenever he gets back on the field, whether that, I don't think it's going to be before or the day of the Dolphins practice, to be quite honest with you. I think Trey is probably more in line for Detroit than anything else the first time we see him in, like, a full-blown action situation. But whenever we see him on the field, there's at least this history that you can lean on to know that the team is doing it the right way.
All right, it's not training camp without a kicker battle. Drew Stevens winning this over Jake Moody?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think so. But, you know, both of those guys are going to, you know, I don't know what kickers do when they have a bad day of practice, to be honest with you, but whatever it is they do, they're going to be doing it tonight because, you know, Jake Moody went first today in the kicking period, went 2 for 6, missed his last 4 kicks in a row. So he made his 2 shortest kicks and missed his 4 longest kicks, and that's just brutal. You know what I mean? Yeah. For a guy who, again, like, he doesn't have the leg Drew Stevens has already, so you got to have the accuracy. Like, that's where you're going to make up the buffer is in the accuracy department. So for that, that was pretty brutal. And I mean, we're all human beings, you know what I mean? So I can't imagine Jake didn't, you know, step off the field right then and there wondering if he just doomed himself, you know what I mean? But then Drew goes out there and goes 3 for 6. So it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe today is just the day that, you know, the football gods just don't want kicks to go through the uprights. I don't know. But They both went 1-for-1 in their game.
Was it windy? Is that what it was? Was it just windy? Did they blame the wind?
No. No, it wasn't windy. I don't know. It was really hot. You know, we can try to make an excuse there somewhere. But, yeah, no, it was a bad day for both kickers. You know, Drew's got the bigger leg. Obviously, you know, if he goes 6-for-6 and Jake goes 2-for-6, then I think there's, you know, at least a small population of people talking about maybe it's time to, if you want to keep the kicker competition going, find a new competitor to come in and compete with Drew. But as it is right now, I mean, 2-for-6 and 3-for-6, neither guy is really running away with this thing, but neither guy is out of it yet either.
Yeah, you know, everybody wants to make fun of kickers until they need a kicker to win a game for them and be consistent. Hey, and then all of a sudden, I wish people would look at that more that way. David Harrison, good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Appreciate you.
All right, David Harrison, Locked On Commanders, Commanders Squad, WUSA9. Yeah, everybody makes fun of kickers until all of a sudden you're like, oh, God, we need somebody to kick a 60-yarder for us, which, by the way, is happening all the time in the NFL now. We've gotten to this point where it's just like it's effortless for them. I'm kind of on board with the 4-point field goals, 60-plus yards. Let's do it. Let's turn this into the XFL, the original XFL. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Really can't wait to see Stephon Diggs in this offense. Divert our attention from the Laremy Tunsil injury. Thanks to David Harrison. Joined us last segment. Look, we're starting to get into pads now. We're starting to see a little. Like, again, it's great to watch the highlights, right? And you see stuff. Because we all stop scrolling when you see a slow motion video of Stephon Diggs running into the end zone or Sonny Styles sweating and spewing spit everywhere while the sun sets and he's got blood on his jersey. And it's great, but then you actually want to see the live action that's there too. And, you know, we're getting to a point now where training camp's going to start to ramp up with the pads and the Dolphins and then the preseason game on Friday. And again, we're not going to see some starters or any starters for a majority of this preseason. But any little dabble that you can get, we'll take, right? Like, we'll take any little bit just to get an idea. And seeing Stephon Diggs's just impact on this group of wide receivers, again, the trickle-down effect. The trickle-down effect is such a big deal because you move everybody down, essentially a slot in responsibility, right? Before, it was, well, Antonio Williams might end up having to work his way in to be the number two receiver, right? He might have to get the second most target. Because, again, when we say number two, it's like you're not really going to get the same amount of targets every week, but a guy that holds a significant amount of responsibility. But now you move him down a little bit in terms of the responsibility and the targets and on the depth chart and all of those things. It just they've got more of an ability now to get creative. They got more of an ability to move guys around and give different looks and get creative. And look, they might have to. Right, like they may have to, if the left side of the offensive line just gets exploited this year, which is a possibility with one of the best left tackles in the NFL now missing the first at least 4 months of the season. I mean, you think teams aren't going to target that? You think teams aren't going to sit there and circle that side and realize very quickly that that's their first point of attack is Jaden Daniels' blind side? Because I'll tell you what, that's going to be it. Chris Paul. And I guess Brandon Coleman at left tackle. You know, if they can't hold up, teams are just going to keep going that route. And what is going to happen when they play the Rams? Because you know Aaron Donald's coming back too, right? Like, these pass rushes, man, they're all going to try to exploit that as much as they can. So David Blau and this offense are going to have to get a little bit more creative. They're going to have to account for that. And look, the hope is that Brandon Coleman steps in. He's a veteran. He's worked with Laremy Tunsil and kind of learned a lot of his technique and things along that line. And maybe he surprises, right? Maybe he actually surprises them. I mean, he's still a young offensive lineman, right? I mean, he was a third-round pick back in 2024. It wasn't that long ago. So, you know, there's still an opportunity for him to maybe grow into that. And this could end up being something where you realize, oh, we've got two good left tackles, a good one and then a great one. And then it all works out in the end. I'm trying, man. I'm just trying to look at it from that perspective because it's just, I mean, really, when you think about it, though, right? It's like this whole thing. It's like they have no second-round pick, but they got Laremy Tunsil. Oh, Laremy Tunsil, top 10 off, you know, left tackle, top 10 offensive lineman. Well, he's more than a top 10 left tackle, but there's all, it was just, this was like one of those shored-up positions. We know what we've got. There's the extension, of course. But this is football. It's how it works. Sounds like they might still need kicker, too. They might still have to bring out another guy. Like, Drew Stevens may win it, but may not. It may be more guys coming in. Metal Chris, you don't like the 4-point field goal idea, though, which makes me upset.
No, I don't like it at all.
I know. Why don't you like fun?
I do like fun. I love fun.
But that's fun.
I don't think so.
No gimmicks? No gimmicks?
It's because of the gimmick. It's because it messes with the scoring system. And I like that a field goal is like half a touchdown minus the extra point. But now you're making a four-point field goal, which is like half of a two-point conversion. No.
You're getting real mathy on me here.
Yeah, but that's what it's about, man. I don't want two field goals to be worth more than a touchdown and an extra point. Like, that's stupid to me.
Oh, that changes the whole dynamic, though. Think about that.
In a way, I don't like. A touchdown should be much more valuable.
Kickers, though, left and right, they are kicking 60-yard field goals like it's nothing. I mean, nothing.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not impressive. I am impressed by these guys. Don't get me wrong. I just don't want to see the scoring messed with that.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. It's like a four-point shot in the NBA.
NFL guys doesn't want more field goals either. So,
well, it's never going to happen. Yeah. It's never happening. But it would be interesting if they did try it out in the preseason. Like, let's just see how the strategy changes a little bit. But, yeah, it's one of those wild, over-the-top scenarios that we know is never going to happen. But kickers do continue to get better, and you do – again, there's not a huge spotlight on kicker
until
they struggle.
I thought would always be fun. Now, if you had moved the ball back to where they used to kick off from, right? Now they do it less because they don't want injuries and stuff.
Yeah.
But you had it back, what was it, like the 35 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Kick it, and if you kick it through the uprights on the kickoff, the other team gets the ball on like their own 5.
You know, I could be down for that.
Yeah, see, that way it's not a point thing, but it's still like if you can kick it like that far and get it through the upright.
I mean, listen.
It's not the same as a field goal, of course. It's on the little bill stand. But that's still like, you know, you can pin a team back with no, like, instead of giving them a touchback and then get it on the, used to be the 20, but you know.
You're watching guys boot it through the end zone all the time still. I mean, it's been going on for years since they really changed.
But can you do that accurately?
Right. I wonder how often, if you had to guess, if there were 5 kickoffs in a game, let's just go with 5. How many times do you think you would see out of those 5 the ball actually go through the uprights? I feel like you wouldn't get it every game even. I feel like it's, even though you have the leg, the accuracy is the key there.
You imagine the tension when you're like, so are they going to try an onside kick here or are they going to try to put it through the field goal? You know, it's like now you're adding some strategy in there. You can't just line up for the onside. Now you have to tell them it's on onsides now, so that goes out the window. But you know.
You know, this might be one of your best ideas yet.
Thank you.
I'm going to be honest with you. This is one of your best ideas yet because there is a level of strategy there. And, you know, late in the game, like you said, it's like, are you going to onside kick or are you going to try to pin them back? And if you don't put it through the uprights, well, then they're moving all the way up the field. And it's like, now you've got an extra
layer
of strategy.
It's like if you don't recover the onsides also, right? It's like, but now you've got like 2 options there. So,
you know what? I'm going to help. We're going to push for this now. Together, we're going to campaign for the NFL to make this a rule.
All our connections at the NFL.
Let's make this happen. We could definitely make this happen. It would be fun to watch, though, because you definitely see some kickers trying to boom that damn thing, especially if another team has a really good kick returner. It's like, do you kick away and then let them have the opportunity to still run underneath it, or do you just say, screw it, I'm putting this thing through the uprights?
Yeah, there's a lot of strategy that could be added there. So.
I think there's a solid amount of strategy. 4-point field goal would also bring that, but I can compromise with you and allow these kickers with bigger legs now to just have to put it through the uprights. I think that's a fair compromise. We could do that. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'll tell you what, Sonny Styles is turning heads at camp already, isn't he? Nick Ashew on the Fan. More than one opportunity to lay some serious hits on Jacory Kroski Merritt so far in camp, but they're not doing live tackling, so, you know, he lets up and all that, but you still get that. You get that pop, right? Woo-hoo-hoo. Quite a bit of that from Sonny Styles. But here's the key. And listen, we all know they had a lot of needs on this defense. Sonny Styles, the reason why I was praying for Sonny Styles to follow them at 7 and just so ecstatic that was who they ended up drafting is because the versatility on a defense that has so many needs makes him that much more valuable, right? Because he's actually been really good in coverage. He's got safety DNA, which we all know. Bobby Wagner, love him, but just not good in coverage anymore. I mean, just past that point. There's this high football IQ that Sonny Styles brings to the table. But the athleticism, the speed, the ability to either blitz or drop back in coverage a little bit. I mean, he broke up a pass against Jalen Lane. He's good in zone. Like, he's doing it all for them, and they're pairing him a lot with Frankie Louvu And hopefully that's an opportunity to get more out of Frankie Louvu, closer to what we saw in 2024. See, that's what's it's not just about the new guys on this defense, but it's also about being able to maximize the talent that you already have on the roster, right? Dorrance Armstrong's the big one for me, mainly because he comes back from an injury, and you know we saw what he was able to do last season before he got hurt. So like that's not really like maximizing, that's just healthy and maybe taking another step in his development, right? But Frankie Louvu, it's like we saw it 2 years ago, and we didn't see it last year. So to be able to maximize his skill set and develop some chemistry with somebody like Sonny Styles just adds so much more of a dynamic to this defense. And look, you got to have speed. Like, every team needs to have speed in today's NFL. In a pass-happy league, you need linebackers that can handle coverage, that can blitz, that can do those things that young athletic players can bring to the table. And that's one of the things that they really lacked here. And there should be a lot of excitement around somebody like Sonny Styles because he's embraced this, right? And look, he may not be the green dot right away, and that's fine. He will be maybe when Frankie Louvu's not on the field or whatever. Like, are we really going to care that much who's essentially handling the defensive plays? I mean, that's really what this comes down to. But if we start to see an immediate impact from Sonny Styles with this defense, like right at the beginning of the season, I mean, you know what that's going to do for the rest of this defense? That's just going to pick everything up because great players will just lead by example, right? And Sonny Styles, I mean, he understands the assignment. He understands the responsibility that he does have. Maybe it's not all this year, but he's expected to be an anchor of this defense. In a lot of ways, the quarterback of this defense. You've got your quarterback of the offense set, just needs to stay healthy. If the quarterback of the defense becomes Sonny Styles, you're in a really good spot. And you've addressed a need that does check multiple boxes. And you know, versatility, if Durante Jones is going to make this defense what it sounds like it's going to be from the limited sample size that we have, and fun and fast and rotating guys in and out and really keeping offenses guessing, that's great. And you need guys that can do what Sonny Styles does. And look, I understand that, like, the people that wanted Jeremiah Love and all that, it's cool, right? Like, flashy and fun, and he's a weapon and all that. And this is coming from somebody that has told you for years the running back is coming back and the NFL just looks different. And now we saw it this offseason, right? With all of the deals that were signed by backs that are also receivers and versatile. Versatility matters. Versatility matters in this world. Versatility matters in any business. Versatility matters in the NFL, right? Like, you got to be a little flexible. You got to be able to evolve. And when you have other teams that you're playing, other offenses that have versatile guys out there, big receivers that can make plays, but they're also just fast, like that's what makes a linebacker like Sonny Styles that much more important, right? Because you know that he's got the speed, the athleticism, understands coverage because he's played safety in the past, and you have all these opportunities there for him to really do different things defensively. It's adding a dynamic they didn't have. And I know one player is not going to completely change the defense, but it can make a massive difference. I mean, Micah Parsons and what he did in Dallas, we saw it, right? Jared just didn't want to pay him. But they had really bad defenses, but Micah Parsons was a game changer. I mean, he was. And if Sonny Styles can get to that level, then okay. I mean, that changes the whole dynamic of this. And it's that trickle-down effect I talk about, right? Where then, in turn, you've got other opportunities for other guys because Sonny Styles can do multiple things, and maybe you have, you know, somebody that's just better against the run or better against the pass, and that helps with the rotating guys in and out, all these things, the creativity, the looks. Constantly keeping teams guessing is one of the best strategies that you can have in the NFL. And by the way, that also means continuing to evolve as the season goes on, because we've watched time and time again, right? Teams have hot starts. Offenses have hot starts, not just with the Commanders, but, I mean, any team in the NFL, right? I mean, hell, look at Cliff Kingsbury. He had a 5-3 start and a 7-1 start in Arizona, and then they all fell apart because he didn't evolve, didn't add other layers, and other smart defensive coordinators figured it out. The best defensive coordinators in the NFL are mostly vets. Like, they are the pilots, right? I want a pilot that's seen it all when I'm flying. But offensive coordinators are the tech bros, young, innovative, creative, new, doing things no one else has seen, thinking differently. That's what you want on that. And so if you can't evolve as an offense, these grizzled veteran Vic Fangio-type defensive coordinators are like, I've seen it all. I got it on film here. You did that week two, but it's week 10 and you haven't changed it. That's a problem. And that's what hurts a lot of offenses. It's not the beginning of the season when you surprise everybody. Again, Jim Zorn started off 6-2. And Jason Campbell was an MVP candidate. And then they finished 2-6. Because when you don't change and you think what I'm doing now is working, and it doesn't, and you're like, well, that's all I got, it's hard to move on. And Cliff Kingsbury was very rigid. And I mean, Ron Rivera, remember how rigid Ron Rivera was? Great guy, but just, we all knew. It was like, well, you're gonna stick with the same thing every week, aren't you? Yeah, you're not changing. Okay. This defense, if it can make up for maybe some of the deficiencies bumps in the road this offense may have at the beginning of the season as they're figuring out all these new parts, if this defense can be an aggressive, get after the quarterback, tackles in open field consistently type defense, man, that's really going to elevate this team as a whole. Like, that's really, like, you cannot have another season where you're giving up 384 total yards a game. I mean, you just can't, right? That's why they spent the money they did and addressed all the needs they did defensively. Again, if they can get in the top 10, there's some people, I'm not that optimistic. I'm like, hey, top 15 and I'm happy. But if they can get inside the top 10, like some people think they have the potential to, oh, I mean, that puts this team in a whole other tier, really. Even if you're trying to figure out what's going on at center and left tackle, you still got that. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. You know, it sure is nice to talk about a kicker battle, though, for the Commanders and not a quarterback battle, right? It's a change of pace. Nick Ashew on the Fan. There's a lot of those going on around the league, and at least the Commanders aren't involved with that. And look, like all these young quarterbacks from Jane Daniels' draft class are always going to be compared, but you can already kind of see where the direction of some of the careers are going if something doesn't change, right? Good or bad. Now, Drake May, year one to year two, I mean, he was second in MVP voting. Last year was Drake May's year with Caleb Williams sprinkled in, right? Much better in Ben Johnson's offense, but, you know, still completed 58% of his passes. But that's nowhere near even with Jaden Daniels having the injury-plagued season that he did last year. We know what he did his rookie year. If you're the Falcons or you're the Vikings right now and you look at the quarterbacks that they're dealing with, you've got two retreads and two quarterbacks that were taken in the same draft class that was historic, six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, but Michael Penix Jr. and J.J. McCarthy both have way more questions than answers. And I would certainly argue that both of those organizations are starting to really sweat that we might be talking about the dreaded B-word, bust, with both of them. Now, that doesn't mean their careers can't take off somewhere else. We've seen that plenty of times. But it's been constant injuries for Michael Penix Jr. and J.J. McCarthy. But even when they've been on the field, wildly inconsistent. And some of that also is the fact that, like, hey, if you're not going to spend a ton of time out there, J.J. McCarthy missed his rookie year, and then he's set back to begin with, and he's hurt again. Like, that hurts the development, right? When guys aren't out on the field, you're not actually involved in football, and instead you're doing whatever it is you have to do to rehab an injury. I mean, that sets you back. It's why I'm just begging for Nick Allegretti to get back out on the field so they can give him more time at center. I mean, that's right. That's what we want. But I would not be surprised if Kyler Murray wins the job in Minnesota and if Tua Tagovailoa wins the job in Atlanta. Because those guys have at least proven they can, at least at times, be good quarterbacks. Like, just to put it simple, right? Just they can play as a middle-of-the-pack, very good starter. Now, Tua obviously played in an offense that when it, you know, first started off in Miami, I mean, it was potent. And you had a offensive genius in Mike McDaniel that really helped with that. Do I think he's a head coach? No, but he's a brilliant offensive mind. And we certainly saw enough from Tua for him to get a big deal. I know that doesn't gauge everything, but it's enough to at least say, like, yeah, we got to keep this guy versus what the alternative is. But I just see him under with Kevin Stefanski, who, I mean, a coach of the year in Cleveland. If you can win coach of the year with the Browns, you're a damn good football coach. The Browns are going to learn very quickly. They're going to miss Kevin Stefanski really quick. I think Atlanta's actually going to have a good season this year under Stefanski. But, you know, when you look at that, those are two quarterbacks from Jaden Daniels' class that are really battling just to be starters in a point in their careers, their third year, where it should be established. And don't get me wrong. Like, it doesn't mean that Jaden Daniels can't get hurt. I don't want to say it out loud, but, like, it's a possibility. and you start having more of those questions. But at least, again, you've seen a full season of what he's capable of. It's a lot harder for the Vikings or the Falcons to justify right now what Michael Penix Jr. or J.J. McCarthy can be when you actually haven't seen it. You probably had like one fourth quarter of J.J. McCarthy looking like a legit starting quarterback. Michael Penix Jr., you had some moments, but let's be real. Kirk Cousins looked good when he filled in for him last year once he got hurt. I mean, he did. So both of them right now, you are not going to have a team bring in veterans that have shown high-end potential at times and compete for a starting job if they don't think there's a very good chance they're going to win it. I'm sorry. I just think Kyler Murray is going to win that job in Minnesota and thrive in that Kevin O'Connell offense, and I think the same thing for Tua. Now, again, these are all quarterbacks that have injury history, too. Kyler Murray has dealt with major injuries. We all know that Tua deals with a lot of concussions, and we've seen it live, and it's scary. Michael Penix Jr. injuries, J.J. McCarthy injuries. So, like, all of them are set back because of that partially. I wouldn't look at any one of these teams and say they're in an awesome position, but, I mean, if you can get the most out of Kyler Murray, Kevin O'Connell's got that track record. He did it with Sam Darnold. He did it with Kirk Cousins. I mean, that offense works. And sometimes quarterbacks need a fresh start. It's why I wouldn't just rule out the rest of Tua's career being a complete disaster. Sometimes that fresh start matters. Because, again, guys don't get the opportunity to choose where they're drafted, but sometimes choosing where you can go and making more informed decisions about an offense and a city and an organization and a coaching staff and all these things, when you're a free agent, that's a lot of times why you see quarterbacks eventually grow from that, right? If you make the active choice to say, you know what, I'm going to go to a place you either have to compete for a starting job or maybe you're just going to be a backup, but you know that it can make you better, that's worth the year or two. Mac Jones is going to leave the 49ers after the season and be a starter somewhere. He was 5-3 last year as a starter when Brock Purdy was out, and he looked good. There's a very good chance you're going to get the same situation with Mac Jones that you got with Sam Darnold, where he gets another opportunity and you realize, oh, it just takes a little bit more. I know this may come shocking to some people, but not all quarterbacks are ready to start right away in the NFL. It doesn't mean that they can't be a great quarterback later. The problem is that we're stuck with a system in the NFL where you've got guys for essentially 5 years if you pick up that first round pick, you know, fifth year option. And that's if you draft a quarterback in the first round. You have less opportunity if you're going farther down in the draft. But if you draft a quarterback in the third or fourth round, and you're like, wait, this guy could actually be a starter, you have less of an opportunity, right? Like, years ago, Seattle had to deal with Russell Wilson's contract long before most teams would have to because he was a third-round pick, not a first-round pick. So, yeah, we've got this system where teams are like, got to start him right away. Do you? Just because you want to maximize his contract? If he doesn't make it to a second contract, who cares? Like, the Colts have now put Anthony Richardson on the he's third on the depth chart for them. This guy was the number four overall pick, what, 2 years ago? And he's already demoted. I mean, he's got no opportunity. He wasn't ready. He should have never started. I would argue he should have sat out 2 years. Really. And learn. And get some opportunities in games. But, like, some guys just aren't ready. And if you're not put in a position to succeed... It was 3 years ago. Right, it was 3 years ago. I don't know why I said 2 years ago. You know what I meant. Yeah, 2 years ago was Jaden. You know what I mean. Whatever. It feels like it was just yesterday that Anthony Richardson was drafted. I mean,
we forget about last season.
I know. I mean, that's, yeah. You know, I just try to forget that 2025 happened, period, because that was just a terrible football season for me and the Commanders. But, yeah, I mean, Anthony Richardson maybe never will have the skill set to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. But he certainly hasn't had a chance to develop that at all with the Colts. And you're seeing that. So, situation dictates the success of young quarterbacks all the time. All the time. David Carr, not Derek Carr. I mean, David Carr was drafted by an expansion Texans team and was getting sacked like 5-6 times a game. He had no shot. He should have never started. They started him week one of his rookie year. What are we doing? What do you know? Put him in a position to succeed. Like, and I get it. It comes from ownership. Well, we're paying him this money, and then it's going to be more expensive later. And are you really going to care? Are the Commanders going to care if they have to pay $58 million a year to Jaden Daniels if this year he looks like he's a star? No, they're not going to care what that contract looks like down the road, because at least you know he's developed into somebody that deserves that contract versus the other way around. Well, you know, let's just put him out there right away, and then he's not ready, and then that quarterback ends up struggling, and they don't make it to a second contract. Just the way quarterbacks are managed in this league drives me insane sometimes. Nick Ashew on the Fan.